This is the Breaker.News podcast for the week of July 19th, 2026. I'm Bob Mackin, publisher of the Breaker.News and host of the Breaker.News podcast. Welcome to edition number 457. On this edition, the end of the FIFA World Cup 2026. Argentina and Spain star in the climax of Gianni Infantino and Donald Trump's multi-billion dollar party in New Jersey. A look back at the expensive five-week carnival of controversy across the US, Canada, and Mexico. My guest is Declan Hill, the Canadian investigative journalist, author of books on match fixing, and associate professor at the University of New Haven. Plus, Mario Canseco of Research Co. dives into World Cup trivia and his latest poll about the impact of the World Cup in Vancouver, Toronto, and across Canada. This is the Big Deal feature on the Breaker.News podcast, and the biggest FIFA World Cup in history is coming to a close on July 19th when defending champion Argentina meets defending European champion Spain. Lionel Messi versus Yamin Yamal in New Jersey. FIFA is already patting itself on the back, having a victory lap for record attendance and record revenues. Now, FIFA president Gianni Infantino and MLS commissioner Don Garber are getting what they had wished for, which is a final on the biggest stage in the world with Lionel Messi, who is now a Major League Soccer star. And joining me to talk about all this is Declan Hill, who's associate professor at the University of New Haven in Connecticut, investigative journalist and author of two books on match fixing. Now, we're recording this on July 16th, the day after the final was set, after Argentina's win over England. But still, there's much time for surprises along the way before July 19th, before the final and afterwards as well. But before we get to that, in 2022 for the Globe and Mail, under the headline, "I love soccer, but I won't be watching the World Cup," Declan, you wrote that back then, and that was when Qatar was hosting the World Cup, a World Cup that they essentially bought from FIFA. Qatar sent a team here to this World Cup and played in Vancouver, gotten beaten pretty badly by Canada. They also sent paramilitary officers who were on the streets of Vancouver, uniformed but unarmed. They stood side by side with RCMP officers and Vancouver police officers. Those weren't the ICE agents that some people in Canada were fearing would come here and didn't come here. But did you watch the 2026 World Cup, and what were your thoughts of what you saw unfolding?
Yeah, look, I did watch 2026. I'm a passionate fan of international soccer. I've risked my life, as you know, infiltrating various criminal gangs who corrupt big international sports tournaments and sports leagues around the world. So for me, 2026 was not as bad as 2022. 2022 in Qatar, it was literally the World Cup was built on a pile of bones and blood, up to 10,000 effectively slave were killed to build that World Cup structure. This was even admitted by the guy, the chief guy who ran the World Cup. He said it was only 500 people who had died. It just seemed to me that last one, is sport really worth it? Is it really worth watching this that's being built with so much blood? So I was actually looking forward to 2026 World Cup, and then thanks largely to the Breaker News, this is great independent news agency out of Vancouver. You should really take a look at it sometime. They do fantastic work, Bob. Their work and others over in Europe about how weird this one was made me like much of the soccer, but really have questions about the governance of FIFA, and two, what is we as Canadian taxpayers paying for, and why can't we figure this out? Why can't we just ask a simple question of like, okay, how much did this cost us? And was the party worth it? We've had various figures given to us. Let's start breaking down that particular issue before we get into all the other ones about what was going on. That simple question of how much did it cost us to host 10 soccer games, 10 soccer, as simple as you can be. How much did it cost? Did it cost $100 million? Did it cost $500 million? It's well over $1 billion now. And every time a government official is forced, kicking and screaming to the microphone to tell us how much it costs, it keeps going up. Just before the World Cup, I was on CBC News being interviewed, and the on-air anchor said, "Well, it's now estimated at 780 million." I said, "Look, to do 10 World Cups, I guarantee you it's going to be more. And getting these simple answers from Canadian politicians is like asking them to lick a fire hydrant. They refuse to have basic democratic accountability. How much is that going to cost? The good citizens of Edmonton and Montreal took a look at the early numbers, not these appallingly inflated numbers of this World Cup, and just said, no thanks, we're out. We're not going to pay this money. So those municipalities took a look at the numbers that aren't even half of what Vancouver and Toronto was paying and said, we're not going to do this. This is just not worth our while as citizens, as politicians. So what is Vancouver doing? How much does it cost? How much do these, and this fantastic work, you know, I'm making jokes about the breaker and how amazing it is, but it is true. You're one of the very, very few media outlets across Canada, which is simply asking this basic question. And you were kind enough to point out my Globe and Mail op-ed editorial 4 years ago. I've continued to write for the Globe and Mail every few months. But there, arguably Canada's most powerful news organization hasn't done the very basics as you've done, Bob, which is to submit an application under freedom of information. It should just be public record. How much is this going to cost? And we can't get it. We cannot get this information. And the Globe and Mail and many of the mainstream media outlets in Canada simply don't ask these basic questions. So in this front, I'm deeply disappointed with the event. I've loved some of the soccer games. They've been fantastic, particularly the Cap Verde run. I thought it was amazing. But it's really is symbolic of the lack of democracy that we have in Canada. And the final point on this particular issue is that World Cup regime, that Qatari slave state, sends cops to our country, a democratic country, and is patrolling on our streets. Why? When did they get permission to come here? Who gave them that permission? What are they doing? What kind of information are they gathering here in Canada? And why can't we find out about this? So all this kind of stuff makes me very, very uneasy, not about the state of soccer, but the state of democracy in our country.
The RCMP and Vancouver police officially say that the Qataris were here for training and for goodwill. But did they have
Who's
to be...
goodwill? My goodwill? Because I'm not having any goodwill, having these representatives of slave state walking up and down looking at Canadian citizens. Are Canadian citizens having goodwill by having this autocratic slave state representative strutting around our street? Like, what goodwill is this going to be? And what training do they receive? And does this training, like, if we're getting money from the Qataris, well who's getting it? Who's actually receiving this money? And is it being offset against the FIFA World Cup? Or is RCMP official paying the Qataris for their training? Like, why can't we just have some very basic answers? This is so simple. It's every time we fill in our tax form, every time we send off cash to Revenue Canada, we're engaged in a social contract. We pay our taxes. They should give us information about how they're going to spend it, particularly when they're hand in glove with slave state autocrats like the Qataris.
The 13 matches, 7 in Vancouver, 6 in Toronto. Parliamentary Budget Officer said more than $1 billion, but those were already out of date when they issued that report. Here in Vancouver, with the NDP provincial government, they're saying $729 million is the upper end of the estimate. And if you add other aspects of this, such as the P&E Amphitheater, the new 10,000-plus concert venue at the P&E grounds at Hastings Park, which is the centerpiece, the big revenue generator, supposed to be, for the FIFA Fan Festival in East Vancouver, that cost about $183 million. So if you add that together with the cost of hosting the tournament at BC Place and elsewhere in the city, you're looking at more than $900 million.
Can I add something else to this that your listeners and viewers may not be aware of? FIFA has been designated as an organized crime company. And that's not me, and I'm not being controversial, I'm not being things. There was the famous FIFAgate trial back in 2017 in the Southern District of New York. And the judge there is, and that court system is where the major organized crime, mafia, five families, Russian mob, whatever, that's where those guys go to have their trials. So you've got a very experienced judge, and the prosecution comes in and says, look, we've been studying the modus operandi of FIFA for the last 4 years as we conduct our investigation, do our arrests. And this is a racketeering structured organization, just like the mob and the mafia. And almost unbelievably, the judge looks at it and goes, yeah, you know what? You're right. This is a mob. This is a mafia organization. And even more unbelievably, the defense lawyer who are arguing in front of this judge and jury say, you know what? You're right. It is a mob organization. It's just that our clients happen to be innocent. So this is the organization that has just made over $9 billion off the World Cup. So why didn't we, the Canadian taxpayers, get our expenses covered? Why did we, the Canadian taxpayers, sign an agreement at some point, at some time, to host these games without having our expenses covered? Because if FIFA said, well, we're going to take $1 billion and hand it back to the Canadian taxpayers just to cover the expenses, they still would be making $8 billion. And we wouldn't be in the hawk, but we are paying the losses and all the expenses, and they, FIFA, are walking away with it. And they're an organized crime group. Like, who signs deals with these guys? And when did it happen? And where is the accountability for this? It really is, to get back to the larger lesson, it really is very depressing and very worrying about the state of Canadian democracy. It's as if we are simply controlled by a handful of tiny oligarchs, and hey, let's have a little bread and circus, and they bring in their circus. We're all supposed to be distracted by that instead of asking fundamentally important questions like, how much is this going to cost and who signed the deal?
And to the issue of transparency and accountability, right after the England-Argentina semifinal match, I opened up my email and I got a response from the British Columbia government. Premier David Eby, back when he was a civil liberties activist, was very much a critic of the Vancouver 2010 Winter Olympics and the International Olympic Committee. But as premier, he's gone all in with FIFA. They sent me an invoice. They want me to pay $510 to get a copy of the BC NDP government's FIFA World Cup business plan about how they plan to spend up to $729 million. What? And about the revenue projections that they based their estimates on.
You're the media. Mm-hmm. Like, why isn't it just like, this is their business plan? Why don't they, it should just be on the website. You should just be able to read it. And I grant you, at a certain point, there might be certain commercial details. You can't say, well, you know, which restaurant or how you cook your hot dogs or whatever. Yes, you can have those things in. But the basic stuff is they're spending our money in league with an organization that has been legally defined as a mob group. And the mob group gets to take all the profits, and we, the taxpayers, have to pay all the money. And now you're telling me that they're charging you $510 just to say, hey, can we have the business plan? Can we say this? I mean, this is fundamental. And I think it cuts across NDP, Liberal, Conservatives, whatever in Canada. There's a profound democracy deficit in the country where the politicians think any normal question, any accountability, any just like, hey, we want to develop this, we want to do this, we want to do this thing. I've been following your reporting on Stanley Park. Just show us. And we'll say, okay, you know, soccer games, maybe the public of Canada really wanted to go all in and spend $1 billion on that, on those games. Fine, whatever. I would disagree, but fine. As long as we can talk about it. But this nitty little eagerly wiggly refusal and charging of an independent journalist $510 for stuff that should just be basic is really, really concerning.
I'm resisting and doing whatever I can to get it out of their hands for free, as it should be. So stay tuned, all you out there watching the Breaker.news podcast or listening to the Breaker.news podcast. More to come on that. And Declan, you also wrote in June an op-ed for The Telegraph. It was headlined, "Why This World Cup is Ripe for Match Fixing." And interestingly
Yes.
enough, the photo that they used in The Telegraph was of Lumen Field in Seattle, which turned out to be the stadium where the controversial round of 16 match was played between Belgium and the U.S. Belgium beat the U.S. pretty handily. That's where Fuller and Balogun, the American who was red carded, was allowed to play, and allowed to play after Donald Trump picked up the phone and called Gianni Infantino, one of the most controversial moves in World Cup history.
Look, my work for The Telegraph and on my Substack, Crime Waves, Declan Hill, and I'd be happy if any of our listeners subscribe to me. It's always free. Look, there's two types of match fixing. One is the one that I know quite well, which is for gambling, for making deals and cutting cash on the side for the gambling stuff. And we can talk again about that in a second. But what I think we saw witness to here in this particular World Cup is where politicians or leaders or prominent, powerful people get into the game and try to influence the game to help themselves. And one of my sources is a guy that you know, Tim Donaghy. He was the former NBA referee that was working with Gambino-connected bookmakers and gambling very heavily on NBA games while he was refereeing. And Tim and I have done a number of interviews and talked extensively on this issue. And he said, yes, I did all that, but you've got to realize, Declan, at that time, under that version of the NBA, they were corrupt too. And they would push us as referees to back the big market teams in seven-game series. So that's the way that lots of people made lots of money. And they would never tell us explicitly this is what they were going to do. But the ethos, the modus operandi of the NBA referees, everybody knew what they wanted. Thanks. So, for example, Sacramento, which is a small market team, was really up against a number of refereeing decisions, and they would have. In the fourth and fifth game, as Sacramento was looking as if they would take the series, they would have special training sessions for the NBA referees. They would have identified one of the strengths of the smaller market team. And they said, well, you've got to call all those as fouls now, which would shift the game, would shift it. Same thing for who would become a popular referee. And I don't mean popular with the fans. It's always a bad sign if you're a referee, if you're trying to become popular with the fans, but popular with the league. Those referees would make sure that there were no blowouts, that no team ever won by too much. And they would do so, Bob, not by calling something completely falsely, but it was in that weird gray area of discretionary foul. So it's not completely wrong, it's not completely right. It's kind of a discretionary thing. And I think the issue with this particular World Cup is that we've seen a whole bunch of those discretionary fouls, either called or not called. I think if you are a Muslim soccer fan, be it for Egypt, be it for Iran, be it for whoever, I think you really have a genuine cause for concern. There have been a number of legal cases. There have been tens of millions of non-Egyptians, non-Iranians going, including the head of the Spanish La Liga, you know, their top soccer division, top soccer league, going, this is weird. This is something wrong with the refereeing against these two small market teams when they've taken the big teams to the very edge. So there have been disallowed goals. There have been goals allowed by their opponents. You were mentioning Argentina and Lionel Messi that had exactly the same set of circumstances around that were allowed while the Egyptian goals were disallowed, while the Iranian goals were disallowed. Again, not clear, specific, and this is not a foul, we're going to call it, but in that discretionary zone. Then you had Donald Trump, and I would say more worryingly, a guy called Howard Lutnick, and he is the commerce secretary down here for the Trump administration. He's a man who has been not only deeply involved with Jeffrey Epstein, but lied about it. There's no other word to describe what Lutnick did, you know, in his description of his relationship with Epstein, completely lied about it. Anyway, in the weird world of the Trump administration down here, he's still the commerce secretary, even though he's been caught bang to rights as having lied about his Epstein connection. He meets with Infantino three times during a particularly tense part of that negotiation over the American soccer player. And in a couple of those meetings, he brings in high-priced lawyers. And that's like bringing in mobsters. You bring a mobster to a meeting, that means something. Just the fact that they're there is enough to send a threat, is enough to send, hey, FIFA, if you don't do what we want, you're going to have a lawsuit against it. And all the decisions that we've done about cost sharing and revenue and all these kind of things, we're now going to change our mind. But they don't need to say that because they're just there like the mobsters in the room saying, hey, we're here. We're just here. We, you know. So it's taken, as soon as you bring those high-priced lawyers in, it takes it out of a let's have a friendly discussion into a clear symbolic threat of what's going to happen to you, FIFA. And FIFA has folded. FIFA clearly folded. There's been some excellent reporting from the Times of London into that particular decision to bring in, to let the American star player back, despite an automatic red card, one game suspension. And that decision was only done by yet another of these slave state, the United Arab Emirate guy. He was the one guy who made the decision. It wasn't a committee. It wasn't a whole group of people in a room discussing, hey, do we do this? Just one guy, UAE guy. That, too, mirrors what happened to Cristiano Ronaldo. November 15th of last year, 2025, he has a White House dinner with Donald Trump and Gianni Infantino, the president of FIFA. 2 days later, his red card suspension is overturned. So you have in these two cases, and this is the first time this has happened in the World Cup since 1962, and that was only one particular case there. You have these two exceptional cases with enormous amounts of political conflicts of interest going on. And I genuinely think as a soccer fan, you can have good faith concerns about this. You can not be a conspiracy theorist and say, what is going on? Why is this happening? Certainly, if you were to have concerns about this, the list of people who also have concerns starts with the Norwegian Football Association, the Spanish Football Association, the Egyptian Football Association, the captain of the Iranians, who went through a whole series of other problems and issues with the American police following them and not letting them stay in the country and all kinds of stuff. So this has been, in my opinion, a tainted World Cup for the soccer product that we're actually seeing on the field because of this political interference.
And Donald Trump is obviously hated and loved by many, very polarizing, not only in the United States, but around the world. But he's also a showman. He's a huckster. If you get down to the brass tacks. And that red card waiver dominated the news cycle for a day or two. And it resulted in very high TV ratings for Fox, the host broadcaster in the U.S. It may have also resulted in some extra profits for a company that's close to Donald Trump. I mean, this relationship between Donald Trump and Gianni Infantino and FIFA has really defined this World Cup in so many ways. But there's a company that not many people know of. It's called On Location. People might know of its sister companies or brother companies, if you will, much better. It's their brother or sister companies are WWE and UFC. And On Location already banked about $500 million before this World Cup even kicked off, from sales of luxury suites at stadiums, from VIP tickets at stadiums, from lounges.
I honestly didn't think seats like this existed. This is FIFA Hospitality's on-the-pitch seating, and you're literally watching the FIFA World Cup from field level. When your team scores, you're celebrating just steps away from the pitch. The energy is unreal, and the views are absolutely insane. And if you get hungry or want another drink, everything comes right to your seat, so you never miss a second of the action. You can experience on-the-pitch seating in Miami and New York, New Jersey. So if getting closer than ever to the beautiful game is on your bucket list, now's the time to book. Cheers.
To governments here in Canada, the City of Vancouver, City of Toronto were both clients of On Location. City of Vancouver has been very reluctant to say much about how much it spent, although it did say about $14 million to buy product, quote unquote, at BC Place Stadium during World Cup matches. I'm going to try to find out exactly who benefited from that. So that's one aspect of this tournament benefiting people who are connected to Donald Trump. Linda McMahon, the education secretary, is someone who has reported investments in On Location and people who did business with Donald Trump before he got into politics are heavily involved in this company as well. This is also very unsettling how this tournament also was defined by the high ticket prices. People who wanted to go, who love the game so much from around the world, whether they be from cities in North America or people who travel around to World Cups, just couldn't afford to go.
So this has cost us over $1 billion having these soccer games in our country. We paid the expenses. FIFA, the organized crime organization, gets to keep all the profits. Okay, well, who got to see the games? Was it our kids? Was it worthy community soccer coaches? Were it people who lined up all night to pay their $60 to get in the stadium? No, it was a bunch of rich tourists around the world who could afford to pay thousands of dollars to see this. And I've got to say, quite frankly, the atmosphere in those stadiums when I'm watching it on television is just boring. As much as people, you know, wiggling their little canapes, stickies and stuff, it wasn't like the people watching this. And I think what we're doing here is cruising. And this event has symbolized the spirit of our age very well. And I don't care whether you're from the right wing, the left wing, wherever, as a journalist like yourself, Bob, I'm a neutral. Our age has been dominated by the greatest acquisition of public wealth in the history of humanity. A small handful of billionaires and now trillionaires have taken our public lands. They've taken our public cash. They've taken the resources of our children. They peed in the faces of our wives and families and deprived them of education and resources and opportunities and whatever. And this World Cup seems to me symbolic of that thing that's going on, those billions of dollars that have been taken out from the people. So you're not getting the people actually watching the game. You're getting the people paying for it. You're getting the people subsidizing it. And you're getting these politicians making Bob Mackin and the Breaker.News pay $500 just to get the basics, just to say, hey, how much did this cost? And what was your business plan? And did your business plan work? Because it looks to us that no business with a business plan of losing $700+ million to host seven soccer games would be in business for a long time. So that's my take on this World Cup. It's left me with a sour taste. There were some, I have to say, extraordinarily good games when we could drop that. The England-Mexico game I thought was just wonderful. Case in point, the Mexican stand seemed to me in any way, I don't know Mexico all that particularly well, to be full of regular people and the atmosphere was quite good. But for the rest, this has been a worrying World Cup. A worrying because, to get back to our original point, democracy seemed to be absent. Our politicians are treating basic accountability, as I said, as if they were asked to lick a fire hydrant. And the actual games, many of the games themselves seem to be influenced by something. There seems to be something else putting their thumb on the scales of justice during those games.
Yeah, too. The two Canada matches played in Vancouver did have quite a passionate atmosphere there. But again, who was actually occupying those seats? Were those clients of Canada Soccer or sponsors? How many of them were actual hardcore fans? There were the Voyageurs, the fan group that led the march to the match. They were able to get some of the very low-cost $80 or so tickets at the earliest stages. But again, there weren't enough of those. The most passionate fans, however, were outside on the streets, relegated to watching on big screens at public squares and parks or the FIFA Fan Festival. Now, one thing that this World Cup did leave people with questions about was the integrity, not only the treatment of the Iranian team for political purposes during the U.S. and Iran war. The Iranian team had to move its base from Arizona to Mexico and couldn't stay overnight after matches played in the U.S. In the round of 16, there was that strange incident where England's first goal against Norway should have been called back. The ball hit the cable, the overhead cable for the overhead camera. The Replay showed that it did, but FIFA tried to brush that off and said the ball didn't detect anything. Is it any wonder that the public is starting to have doubts, especially after what we're seeing now is this springtime report that Blacklock's reporter uncovered that was commissioned by the Department of Canadian Heritage from a company called Leger. It's called a Survey on Ethics, Equity and Safety in Sport. More than 10,000 Canadians were polled, and it found that there is perceived match manipulation. The perceptions of match manipulation have increased across all sport levels, and more people in Canada are thinking that professional sport is fixed. But 38% believe professional sport is fixed. That's up from 31% the last time they did this survey in 2024. People also think that there's more fraud or bribery in sport. What does this say about the state of sport if more people are starting to have questions about what they're watching? And if more people are starting to have questions about what they're watching, aren't they going to then take the next step and not watch?
Here's what leapt out at me, that before the legalization of sports gambling, less than one in five Canadians thought there was any kind of challenge to the integrity of sport, be it professional or be it amateur. And in the four short years between the legalization of gambling and the time they had that, the actual poll was done, that number climbed in cases between 17 and 18%, i.e. less than one in five, to close to 40%. So you're seeing, as the public becomes acclimatized to sports gambling, this idea that corruption exists in professional and amateur sports grows broader and broader and broader. And I'm going to leave my passion, which is that a lot of those beliefs are true, that there are fixed games, there are corruption, not all the time, but there are stuff. And get to your point, which is that is an existential problem for sports. When you have now up to 40% of your sporting public thinking, nah, this is corrupt, nah, this is some kind of corruption going on, that's not going to help you. That's not going to help your product. If you had 40% of your population thinking, hey, those baked beans that you're selling in the can, yeah, maybe one in 10 of them are dirty or toxic or corrupted, I'm not going to buy that baked bean, Tim. I'm not going to buy that thing of jam. It's the same thing with sports. As soon as you have a significant percentage of the population thinking, no, that's corrupt, I'm not going to bother watching that thing, sports leagues are going to start to decline. So I think that is what we're facing now.
Yeah, and the Department of Canadian Heritage survey also said 80% of people that were polled believe the onslaught of sports betting ads that we're seeing pose a threat to children and youth. During this World Cup, we've seen ads at the stadiums here in Canada, in Vancouver and Toronto, for a company called Betano, which is actually, it's from Malta, but it's licensed in Ontario. It's not licensed here in British Columbia. We also saw those ads for ADI Predict Street in Abu Dhabi, quote-unquote prediction market. Kalshi, the big American company, is now a partner of ADI.
I should jump in for 1 second, because as soon as you mention Malta and betting, like, you got a problem. Like, you just got a problem. And I've made the joke, I made the thing, and please, anybody who's listening who has any skepticism about that, go check that out. But also check our colleague, Daphne Coluna, who was executed in a car bomb explosion on the streets of Valletta, Malta, as she began to uncover the close connections between Italian mafia, organized crime, the Maltese politicians, and sports gambling world. This is bad stuff. And here we have, paid for with Canadian taxpayer money, these sports events, and they're bringing in Maltese companies. I'm not saying that Betano is in any way linked to the murder of our colleague, but I am saying, what are we doing? Like, what are we doing? What have we just done? What is this sports event being about? And getting back to my original proposition, this has been about a glorification of the 1% elite that is controlling more and more our societies. And right wing, left wing, center, whatever, we've got to start dealing with these guys in the proper way.
Yeah, here in British Columbia, that company Betano is not licensed. And both the federal and provincial laws say that in order for you to advertise gambling in British Columbia, you must be licensed by the government, and the Crown Corporation that is licensed that handles that is BC Lottery Corporation. It's got the legislated monopoly here in British Columbia. Betano is not allowed to operate here in British Columbia, but I asked the British Columbia government about it, and they basically said, well, that's FIFA and a FIFA sponsor, and Betano doesn't offer advertising, doesn't offer gambling in British
We're
Columbia.
paying FIFA's
They
expenses. Just a second. I want to get back to the original point. We're paying over $1 billion for FIFA, and they're taking all the profit, and their sponsors are coming in. And what we don't get to say? Like, what does our $1 billion pay for? It certainly pays seemingly for the slave state law enforcement gang to be wandering our streets. But yeah, anyway, the whole thing has left me with a sour taste in my mouth, and that is from a man who's passionate about his international soccer.
Declan Hill, associate professor at the University of New Haven in Connecticut. He's an investigative journalist, author of two books on match fixing, and you can hear more of him and read more of him. Go find the Crime Waves podcast and the Crime Waves on Substack.
Thank you so much again for all this opportunity to speak to you and your viewers, and really hope we can do it again. And thank you very much for your work.
When the MMA panel was on a previous edition of the podcast, looking at halftime of 2026, halftime political and economic trends, Mario Canseco predicted Spain. He predicted Spain would win it all while we were actually sitting in the rain. Who will win the World Cup on July 19th?
Spain.
Spain. Well, I'm thinking that this possibly could be England's year. This final is Argentina against Spain. Argentina is vulnerable. They got by Cape Verde, Egypt, Switzerland, and England. They got by, did what they had to do as an elite team could and should. They didn't look impressive for 90 minutes. But Spain had a harder route to the final, beating Austria, Portugal, and France. Are you still holding on to Spain as the winner of this World Cup?
I am. I think it's been a remarkable change from a team that used to be very offensive a few years ago to one that has been particularly good defensively. They've only been scored on once. I think they will win probably by a score of 2-0, similar to the situation that we've seen in some of the matches where they've won, where they are able to get a little bit ahead and then try to contain whatever the other team is doing, certainly not in the way that England did it. I had expectations of an England-Spain final because of what happened when Mexico hosted the World Cups before. In 1970, Mexico gets eliminated by Italy. Italy makes it to the final and loses against Brazil. In 1986, Mexico hosts. It's eliminated by West Germany, and West Germany makes it to the final against Argentina. So my hope was an England-Spain final, but it was not to be.
Your trivia posts on X have been quite enlightening, including the curse of Mexico. No team that has defeated Mexico in an elimination game in the World Cup has actually won the cup. That hasn't happened, didn't happen, won't happen this time, because England is the latest casualty. That was one of the interesting pieces. And the other interesting piece is that Argentina won the cup the two times that Canada has previously participated in the World Cup. 1986 and 2022. Now you don't think it'll happen this time, and you also don't think that it'll happen in penalty kicks. You're predicting a 2-0 score. If it got to penalty kicks, Argentina has a historical edge: 6-1 all time in penalty kick shootouts in the World Cup. Spain has a dismal 1-5 record.
Yes, very bad for Spain. The only time Spain won a penalty shootout was in 2002 when they won to play South Korea and then lost to South Korea in the next penalty shootout. It's a tough one in that sense. Argentina has been very good at this. They've only lost once against Germany back in 2006, hoping certainly that it doesn't go to penalty kicks. And it's going to be very complicated. I think part of what we have is two teams that know each other well because of the connections of the teams with each other. And also a little bit of a history lesson there because the two coaches, Luis de la Fuente and Lionel Scaloni, used to work together at some point. So it's another case of, the master against his pupil.
And you conducted a research co-poll during the World Cup, and you found that more Canadians are fans of the game since Qatar 2022. So in the last 3.5 years, more people have turned on to the game. And 1 in 5 actually say they watch soccer as much as they can. And 28% say they watch it once in a while. And more than half followed the World Cup, and more than a third were interested in Team Canada. Do these answers, do these numbers surprise you at all?
I think it's a beautiful way to look at the momentum that the game has. You know, going back to Qatar 2022, it happens in December. People may not be that fully into it. You're still working. You're still doing things. The times in which the matches were played also were problematic for most Canadians. But we see a significant increase in how many are paying attention, not just to the games themselves, but also looking at the highlights. There's a 9-point increase in the level of engagement from Canadians with the national team. So that's definitely good news. I think it's more about what happens after the World Cup. How is Canada soccer going to engage with this new fan base? You can't just keep the game in Toronto and in Vancouver. You have to expand it a little bit, maybe have a few games in Edmonton, maybe consider taking the game to Atlantic Canada or to Quebec for a couple of matches, just to ensure that this is the type of thing that we can see. I mean, if we go, as has been discussed, to a 64-team World Cup, it's going to be very hard for Team Canada not to make it. But even if we have a 48-team World Cup, it's a team that has been doing very well. I think there's an expectation that the team will be there in the next World Cup unless something very drastic happens. And the only way to build on that report is to make sure that Canadians start to pay attention to the teams during the moments that go from one World Cup to the next. We cannot have a situation where you compete and where the team becomes significantly more important for Canadians if you're only doing this whenever the World Cup happens.
We also learned that people will pay $1,000 for a ticket to a first round match at a World Cup. Now, you found through the poll that more than two-thirds of people say Canada should take part in 2038. That's if it comes back to North America, like the speculation is that it will. Do you expect that number to hold?
I think what really fascinated me about that particular question is how many people want to expand this. You know, Toronto and Vancouver was nice, but could we take this to more cities? Could we take this to other places that didn't have the World Cup experience? And 37% said yes. Fewer than 10% are telling us, no, I don't want anything to do with this. Now, we could be in a situation similar to the one we had after the 2010 games in Vancouver, where people were happy, you know, Team Canada did well and nothing got broken and there were no security concerns in a specific event that was being held so shortly after 9/11 in a way. But then as we continue to ask about it, the level of support for a new bid, particularly when it came to the Winter Olympics in Vancouver, really never matched what we saw during the games or immediately after. So part of the complexity here is going to be how the cities explain what was done, what happened. Obviously, we saw a lot of the jerseys and a lot of the fans who were happy. And we met people who were in Vancouver who didn't really care about the Winter Olympics because this is essentially a Northern Hemisphere deal. So, you know, having the Colombians, having the Algerians, having, you know, those who came to watch the matches from Egypt or Australia or New Zealand or Turkey, that was fun. And I think that is part of what might make the issue more compelling down the road, provided that there's a full accounting of expenses and that people can say we actually broke even or we did it even better than we expected, which is something that we never quite saw from VANOC. You know, they managed to hide some of their expenses consistently and never actually told Canadians and Vancouverites how the money was spent.
We saw after the 2010 Winter Olympics, again, the questions about how much it really cost, the lack of transparency about that. The Auditor General never got involved in doing a final report. The Freedom of Information Law was not applicable to VANOC because of the way that it was incorporated as a federal not-for-profit corporation. So those questions about how much it cost, especially after the Great Recession we experienced in 2008-2009, did leave those questions, and we wonder if it'll be properly answered this time around, because one of the biggest line items, if not the biggest line item of FIFA World Cup in Vancouver, was security. You know, when the 2030 Olympic bid happened, what was so shocking to me was really the lack of enthusiasm by the public. There were enthusiastic politicians at public events and photo ops and members of the First Nations that were supporting this along with the Canadian Olympic Committee. But when it came to the public and when it came to the wider sport community, it was shocking how little enthusiasm there was, because I think people were pretty exhausted by what had happened after the Olympics and how the city had become very unaffordable and how the city had other problems when it came to homelessness and addiction and people were starting to look at the challenges in getting adequate healthcare and adequate education. So could this happen as well? There might be a bit of a honeymoon, and then when reality kicks in, people stand back and say, well, once was enough.
Well, there's a couple of issues at play also. You know, this we're looking at something that will happen in 2038. The Donald Trump that is in the White House right now is guaranteed not to be there constitutionally. Who knows how this is going to go as far as the Americans extending the hand again and doing what happened, which was essentially, if we want to get the bid, we need to have some games in Mexico and some games in Canada. Or will we see soccer evolve to a point where Canada can bid on its own, similar to the war, if you will, that happened in 1986 when it was either Mexico or USA taking over as hosts from Colombia? But I think, you know, part of what makes this a little bit different than 2010, in my view, is you have two cities that have to talk about what happened. And there's going to be a significant difference unless they get together and say, this is everything that we need to talk about. If you have a scenario where Toronto is disclosing more than Vancouver, then we could be in a scenario where Vancouver is forced to say what they want to do, or it could be the opposite way. Vancouver becomes significantly open with everything that happened, and all in the line items are there, and everybody knows how much money was spent, and then Toronto says no. But you know, I think part of it is going to have to do with what happens in the next few years when the bid actually takes place. Are we going to be in a good situation to look back on the FIFA World Cup of 2026 and say, yes, we want to do this again? Or is it going to be similar to what you described happened when 2030 Winter Olympics seemed like a real possibility and have people going, yeah, maybe not. Did it once, but I don't see any benefit from doing it again.
Thanks again to Mario Canseco of Research Co. for joining me on the Breaker.News podcast on FIFA World Cup final weekend. That's it for the Breaker.News podcast. I'm Bob Mackin. Thanks for joining me. Bookmark the Breaker.News and the Breaker.ca. Follow on social media. We're on X, Threads, and Blue Sky. Follow the YouTube channel for the Breaker videos. And sign up for the free email newsletter. BobMackin.substack.com. Become a paid subscriber, get early access to podcasts. Thanks again, and until next week.